Beis Amud Aleph, we're up to the second line. So the Gemara says, Atzitz shel echad uzraim shel acher, macher bal atzitz leval zraim, kevan shemashach kana, macher bal zraim leval atzitz, lo kana ad sheyachzik bizraim. The Gemara now is continuing with this theme that we ended off the day yesterday, discussing what's called an atzitz nukov, this perforated flower pot. So now the Gemara says, imagine the following. Let's say Reuven owns the actual pot, and Shimon owns the plant growing in the pot. Now, one wants to sell it to the other. So let's say, for example, Reuven, the owner of the pot, wants to sell the pot to Shimon, the owner of the plant. So all Reuven Shimon has to do is do Meshicha. Once he does a Meshicha, he pulls on the flower pot, he acquires it. Again, the flower pot itself is metaltalin, it's movable property, so Meshicha is a valid kinyan for that. The plant, assuming that it's an atzitz nukov, which is the case here, it's perforated, the plant itself is considered to be like karka, so as we'll talk about in a second, there is a different method of kinyan when it comes to karka. So if it's the reverse, if let's say, for example, Shimon, the owner of the plant, wants to sell the plant to Reuven, the owner of the flower pot, so the only way in which Reuven can acquire the plant is that he has to be what's called yachzik bizraim, he has to be a chazaka. The Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin explains that Chazaka is one of the methods of Kinyanim for Karka, the other two being Kesef and Shtar, as we'll talk about in a second. And what that means practically basically means he has to do some kind of an activity. He has to remove the weeds. He has to rake around the area of the plant. He has to do something to demonstrate that he's now acquired possession of. Fine. Then the Gemara says, Atzit uzuraim shel echad umecharan la'acher hechzik bizraim kane atzit. V'zohi sheshaninu nechasim she'en lehem achrayas niknen im nechasim she'yesh lehem achrayas bechesef uvishtar uvah. Then the Gemara says, let's say the following. Let's say it's Reuven owns the pot and the plant inside himself. He owns both of them. And now he wants to sell the pot with the plant to Shimon. So the Gemara says that if he wants to do that, so if Shimon does a chazaka on the plant again, he digs, he rakes, he weeds around the area of the plant, so then he not only acquires the plant, he also acquires the pot. How does that work? So this is a famous Mishnah that appears in Maseches Kiddushin that says that whenever you have what are called nechasim she'ein lahen achrayas, that refers to possessions that don't have a guarantee. That's another way of saying metaltalin. Metaltalin can be acquired agav karka. There's a famous kinyan called kinyan agav. The Gemara in Kiddushin and a few other places discusses exactly the nature of that kinyan, whether it's a doraisa or a derabbanan, it's a whole machlokas in the Rishonim. But basically the bottom line is that if I acquire karka, and again in this case the plant, because there's a hole in the bottom of the pot, the plant itself is considered karka. If I make a kinyan on the plant, i.e. the karka, I acquire the pot almost agav, almost incidentally to the plant. But if it's in the reverse, if I try to make a kinyan on the pot, then the Gemara says I don't even acquire the pot. I don't acquire anything until I do a chazaka on the plant itself. Fine. And then the Gemara says nikvo ba'aretz v'nofo b'chutzal la'aretz. Abai amar basar nikvo azlinan. Rava amar basar nofo azlinan. Gemara is a very strange machlokes here. Let's say I have again this perforated flower pot, but the perforation, the hole in the bottom of the flower pot is in Eretz Yisrael, but the branches are growing into chutzlaret. So this pot is mamash on the border of Eretz Yisrael. So the question is this an Eretz Yisrael type of a plant, and is it going to be subject to Trumos, Meiser, Shemitah, etc., or is this considered to be part of Chutzar? So that's a machlokas. According to Abaye, you follow wherever the perforation is. If the hole is in Chutzlaretz, then it's a Chutzlaretz plant, and if it's an Eretz Yisrael, then it's an Eretz Yisrael plant. The Rava says that you follow the branches, wherever the branches are. So the Gemara explains, B'da Ashrush, Kule Amalo Plige, Ki Plige B'da La Ashrush. The Gemara says this machlokas between Abaye and Rava is only referring to a case where the plant has not taken root. However, if the plant has actually taken root into the ground, then you follow wherever the roots are. Then you're going to follow the branches, and everyone would subscribe to, in other words, even Abaye would agree that you would follow the branches and the roots. So asks the Gemara, Uve da Ashrish Lopligi, is that true that even in a case where the plant has taken root, that Abaye and Rava do not disagree? The Hasnan, Shtei Ginos Zoal Gavzo, the Yerek Bein Sayim, Reb Meir Omer Shel Elyon, Reb Yehuda Omer Shel Tachton. There's a Mishnah at the very end of Maseches Bava Metzia that quotes the following machlokas. Imagine you have Reuven and Shimon own two gardens or two terraces that are adjacent to one another. One is on top of the other, and there is a vegetable patch in between the two gardens, and the Mishnah above Matiyah wants to know who is considered the owner of those vegetables in between the two adjacent terraces. So that's a machlokas. According to Reb Meir, the owner of the upper terrace, of the upper garden, owns the vegetables, and Reb Yudah says, no, it's the owner of the lower garden. So the Gemara explains, Hasam Kedikta...
wild those vegetables? Nobody tended to them?
Well, that's not necessarily the issue. Even if someone planted them, it doesn't necessarily mean that that area belongs to them. Right? If you plant something on someone else's property, it doesn't mean that it belongs to you, right? That would just be gazela, right? So the question basically is, who owns that area in between the two adjacent terraces? So the Gemara says that this is a scenario where obviously things have taken root. There are vegetables growing, and yet there's still a machlokas between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. So wouldn't that lead us to believe that even in a case where the plant has started to take root, that Abaye and Rava should still disagree? So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Hasam kedektani taima, Amar Reb Meir, ma'im yirtze el yon litol es afaro ein kanierek. Amar Reb Yehuda, ma'im yirtze hatachto lemalos es ginaso afar ein kanierek. The Gemara says that there's a very specific reason why Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda are disagreeing in the Mishnah at the end of Bava Metzia. Their machlokas does not revolve around the question about whether you follow the roots or you follow the branches or you follow the perforation of the pot. That's not the issue in the end of Bava Metzia. The issue is as follows, is that according to Reb Meir, the reason why the vegetables that are located in between the two adjacent terraces belong to the owner of the upper garden is because that person who owns the upper garden could theoretically fill that area with dirt, and it would then make it impossible. I'm sorry, he could remove the dirt, thereby making it impossible for the owner of the lower garden to plant anything, because if you don't have any dirt, there are no nutrients for the vegetables to grow. On the other hand, Rabbi Huda disagrees and says that the vegetables belong to the owner of the lower garden, because he says that if he were to fill his garden with dirt, there would be no vegetables there. In other words, the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda at the end of Bava Metzia is not a machlokas about determining what's considered a vegetable. It's a very technical machlokas about who has the rights to destroy the vegetables in the middle. Whoever is the person that has the control over theoretically destroying those vegetables is going to be the owner of the vegetables. Fine. Then the Gemara asks, "Va'akati b'da'asher shlo plige v'hatanya ilan miktsaso ba'aretz u'miktsaso b'chutz la'aretz tevel v'chulin me'uravin zeba zed divrei Rebbe." Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer hagadol b'chiyuv chay v'hagadol b'ftur pater. My love miktsat snofo ba'aretz u'miktsat snofo b'chutz la'aretz. So the Gemara then pushes back again. The Gemara says, but still, even in a case where the plant has taken root, it still seems that there should be a machlokas. Again, this is going back to the Gemara's original point where the Gemara wanted to argue that Abaye and Rava only disagree regarding a scenario where the plant has not taken root. But if the plant has taken root, then even Abaye agrees that you follow the branches. So the Gemara is now pushing back on that again, because there's a Tosefta that appears in Maseches Maisros that seems to undermine that theory. The Tosefta says the following. Let's say there's a tree that's situated again on the border. So part of the tree is in Eretz Yisrael, part of the tree is in Chutz La'aretz. So the question is, how do you view the different components of that tree? Do you look at that tree? So, according to Rebbe, he says you have to look at the entire tree as if it's a big mixture, as if it's Tevel, Chulin, everything gets mixed together. Because in theory, if you knew the whole tree was in Eretz Yisrael, then everything would be Tevel, because everything would be Chayiv and Trumos and Maestros. If you knew the whole tree was in Chutz La'aretz, then everything would just be Chulin, because there is no Trumos and Maestros, Mida Oraisa, outside of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says that according to Rebbe, everything is just a big mixture. You have no idea what's what. So you have to view the whole tree as if it's a mixture of Tevel and Chulin. Whereas according to Rabbi Shulman Gamliel, he says you actually have to draw a line down the middle. So the part of the tree that grows in Eretz Yisrael, that part of the tree is Tevel. The part of the tree that grows in Chutz La'aretz, that part of the tree is considered to be Chulin. So the Gemara says, seemingly, the case is that part of the tree, part of the branches are in Chutz La'aretz, part of the branches are in Eretz Yisrael, and there's still a machloka. So doesn't that undermine our previous theory that even in a case where the plants have taken root, in other words, there's a machlokas regarding the status of the tree.
Isn't there something?
Wait, sorry. I want to. Yeah, Danny. Sorry. That's a separate question. Here the issue is not really a Rishus Hayachad, Rishus Harabim question. Here the issue is whether it's Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz.
I'm saying that it has different connotations, different halachas.
Correct. It's the same principle, I guess. It's the same theory, but it's a different application. Yeah, Walter, do you have a question?
Can we go by the trunk? Suppose the trunk is in
one. That's also a question. Yeah, so that issue comes up actually in Maseches Makos. The Gemara Makos has a discussion about this, about let's say a person has to run to an Ir Miklat, and there's a tree, and the branches are overhanging outside of the Ir Miklat. There's a whole technical discussion about that. For our purposes, the Gemara is really just interested in trying to define where is this plant located, where is this tree located, is it Eretz Yisrael, is it Chutz La'aretz, is it Chayiv in Trumos Maisros, or is it not? That's really the issue at hand here. So again, the Gemara seems to be implying from this Tosefta Maisros, it seems clear that that part of the tree is in Eretz Yisrael, part is in Chutz La'aretz, and yet there's still a machlokas between Rebbe and Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Lo miktsas sharashin ba'aretz u'miktsas sharashin b'chutzal la'aretz u'may taima derashbag demavsik tzunma by taima derebi dehadre arve. The Gemara says that really the case is that part of the roots are in Chutz La'aretz and part of the roots are in Eretz Yisrael. So the question then is, what's the machlokas exactly between Rebbe and Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel? So the Gemara says that according to Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, you actually have a rock that's dividing the two halves of the tree. There's literally a line of a physical line of demarcation that divides the two halves halves of the tree. So you can easily tell which half is in Eretz Yisrael, which half is in Chutz La'aretz, and that's why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says the half in Chutz La'aretz is Patra from Trumas and Maisers, and the half in Eretz Yisrael is Chayav. So the obvious question is, okay, so why does Rebbe disagree? If there's an obvious clear line that's dividing the two halves of the tree, why would Rebbe say that we just view the whole tree as a mixture of Tevel and Chulin? So the Gemara says that everything got mixed together afterwards. In other words, we don't really know exactly where the line is, or we can't really tell where the line is. Something happened after the fact that makes it hard to identify exactly which part is in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz. So the Gemara says, B'maikom Miflagei, Mar Savar Avira Mevalbel, Umar Savar Hailechudekai Vahailechudekai. Rebbe is of the opinion that the air surrounding the tree mixes all the nutrients together. So it's not so much about the roots. In other words, even if you knew for a fact which half of the tree was physically situated in Eretz Yisrael and which half was physically situated in Chutz La'aretz, Rebbe would say that still doesn't make a difference because the tree is being sustained from the nutrients. The nutrients are coming from both halves, Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. So you can't really tell where the tree is being sustained from. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he says, no, each half of the tree stands on its own, and therefore you could clearly identify each half of the tree separately. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rebbe Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, Amar Rebbe Chiya Barasi Mishmei De'ula, Gimel Orosein, Matza, Chipa, Vidiftera. Now again, the Mishnah spoke about a machlok, as we mentioned this yesterday, about whether you're allowed to write a get on paper which could theoretically be forged or tampered with. We mentioned two examples in the Mishnah, paper which is already erased that could theoretically be tampered with, or paper which has not been fully processed yet. So the Gemara explains that there are three stages of processing leather to eventually make it into paper that you can write on. The three stages are called Matza, Chipa, and Diftera. So the Gemara explains what all these three stages are. Matza kemashmo, delo maliach, so matzah just means it's completely unprocessed. It means it wasn't salted, there was no flour, there were no gall nuts, it wasn't processed whatsoever. So asks the Gemara, Lamai Hilchasa, Lahotzah Shabbos, Vechamash Yuru, Kediktani, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Kedei Lotzer Mishkal Ktana, Vechama Amarabai, Ki Riva, Deriva de Pumpadi. So we spent a lot of time back when we learned Masechah Shabbos a bunch of years ago. We were discussing this question, we spent about 30 daf on this question about how much of a certain item do you need to carry in order to be chayav on Shabbos. We know, of course, that there's a malach of Hotzah, and yet the Gemara spent pages and pages and pages discussing this question of every particular item that you carry doesn't automatically make you chayav for Hotzah on Shabbos. You need to carry a certain shear of that item in order to be chayav. So now the Gemara is discussing how much of this unprocessed leather, this first stage of leather called matzah, the stage where nothing was done to it, there was no flour, there was no salt, there were no gall nuts, nothing, how much of that do you need to carry on Shabbos to be chayav? So the Gemara says, enough to wrap around a small weight or a small container, which the Gemara defines as 1/8 of a litra of the weights that were used in Pumpadisa. If you carry that amount of unprocessed leather, then you're chayav on Shabbos. Then the Gemara says the second stage was chipa de maliach v'lo kamiach v'lo afitz l'may hilchasa lohutzat Shabbos v'chamet shiuro kedisnan or kedei lasos kamiach. The second stage, known as chipa, means that the leather was salted, but it wasn't treated with flour or with gall nuts. So the Gemara again says that if you carry enough of that leather to make an amulet, then you're chayav on Shabbos. And then finally, diftera, the maliach v'kamiach v'lo afitz l'may hilchasa lohutzat Shabbos v'chamash yiro k'dei lichtov alav eshaget. The final stage of diftera is where it was treated with salt and with flour, but not with gall nuts. And again, the Gemara says that the amount that you have to carry to be chayav on Shabbos is enough to write a get on that leather. Okay. Then we said v'chachamim achshirin man chachamim amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar he to amar edi mesira karsei. The Gemara says this is reflective of the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. We've quoted already many, many times in the Masechta, which is that edi mesira karsei, that it's the edim who transmit the get over, that are the ones who actually effectuate the divorce, as opposed to the Eidei Chasima that Rameir says. So in other words, the Gemara says that it doesn't really matter who signs on the get, it doesn't matter if the get itself could be tampered with, as long as the witnesses saw the get being handed over, that's good enough. The Amar Rabbi Elazar, Lo Hichshir Rabbi Elazar Ela La'alter, Avo Mikanad Asara Yomim Lo Chayshinan, Dil Mahavabe Tana'a Uziyafte. The Gemara qualifies Rabbi Elazar and says that even Rabbi Elazar, who says that Eidei Mesira Karsei, he's only going to say that if the Eidim came into Beis Din right away. They came into Beis Din right away, then there's no chance that anything was tampered with. However, if it was already, 10 days later, if there was a gap in time, then there's a concern that maybe there was some kind of a condition that was added into the get that maybe theoretically could have been forged. However, for Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Mikanad Asara Yamim De Imisa Dahava Beit Tanai Midkar Dechire, the Gemara says even if even if the Edom came 10 days later, it doesn't make a difference, because if in fact there was a stipulation written into the get, the Edom presumably would have remembered that stipulation. And again, there's no concern that anything was actually forged. Fine. And then the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Elazar, Lo Hichshir Rabbi Elazar Ela Begitin, Aval Bishar Shtaros Lo Dichsev Unsatem Bichlicheres Lamanya Andu Yamim Rabim." The Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Bishtaros. So the Gemara then has a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan again about the following issue. According to Rabbi Elazar, he says this idea that you can write a get on paper that could theoretically be tampered with or forged, because again, Rabbi Elazar says it's only the Edim Asira that matter, the Edim who witnessed the transfer of the get, as opposed to the ones who signed. That's only true by a regular get. It's not true by other types of shtaros, by other, you know, a shtar matana or a shtar mechira. For that, you actually need to have, in other words, you have to use permanent paper, paper that cannot be tampered with. How does he know that? It's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says, Unsatem bichli cheres leman yamdu yamim rabim, that you have to write the shtar mechira on a kli cheres, on a shtar of pottery, of earthenware, in order that it lasts a long time. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, even by other shtaros, it's also okay to write it on something which could theoretically be tampered with. So the question, of course, is... So the Gemara says, V'achsiv leman ya'amdu ya'amim rabim. So the question is, how does he understand that pasuk? So the Gemara says, Itza tova kamash. So the Gemara says, Hasam itza tova kamash. The Gemara says, that pasuk was just giving advice, but you don't need to actually write it. Okay, he says that pasuk was just an itza tova, it was just good advice, but it doesn't actually need to be written on something which cannot be tampered with. Okay, then the Mishnah says, Hakok shirin lichtov esageda filu chere shote vekatan, ha'isha kosev esgita ve'ha'ish kosev eshovaro, she'in kium haget ela b'chosama. The Mishnah says that anyone can write a get even a chere shote vekatan. Then the Mishnah adds that a woman can write her own get, the husband can write his own receipt for paying off the ksuba, because as we mentioned already earlier in the Masechta, those things can only be certified with their signatures. So it doesn't really matter who writes the get per se, it has to be properly signed. So asks the Gemara, V'halav b'nei dayanin, who asks the Gemara, how can you say that anyone, even a chere shote v'katan, can write a get? They're not bar das. In other words, they don't have the requisite das to write a get. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, v'hu shahaya gadol min al-gabav. The case is that there was a gadol standing on top of them while they were writing the get, and that's the reason why the get is going to be kasher.